You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Barbara Han Clow. Barbara is an internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, Mayan calendar researcher, and the author of The Mayan Code, The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, and The Liquid Light of Sex, among many other books. She is a regular presenter of international talks and has taught at sacred sites throughout the world. She lives in Vancouver, British Columbia. Tonight, we'll be focusing on the importance of the information presented in her book, Awakening the Planetary Mind. So, let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, too.
Good.
Well, it's good to have you back again. It's been a little while, but what an auspicious time with so many things going on, the various T-squares and astrological alignments. And, of course, we had some news yesterday about a major brouhaha that happened. So, anyway, one of the things that I thought we could start out with is the title of your book, Awakening the Planetary Mind. How did you choose that title?
Well, actually, the publisher came up with it.
Oh.
Yeah, and the Mayan Code is, the subtitle on the Mayan Code is Time Acceleration and Awakening the World Mind. And that one has to do with the codes of the universe itself. And then Awakening the Planetary Mind has to do with the history of the Earth and the history of cataclysms and the way in which major geological and cosmological events have affected humanity. So the two books are kind of tied together. They're books about large cycles of time. Mm-hmm. And certainly I do write with the intention of making those large cycles of time very relevant to the current moment. One of the things I really work on is if we're going to talk about something 20,000 years ago, what does that have to do with right now?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the reasons I think people like these books is they aren't just long, dreary descriptions of you know, hundreds of thousands of years of history.
Right.
Instead, they're relating everything to the current moment, which is something that I think we need so much at this time.
Oh, yes. We've lost our story, for one thing, and in addition to that, the stories have been rewritten, and so it's kind of like going on an exploration when I read your books. It's like an adventure, and you make it an exciting adventure with your writing style and tying so many different things together. So I just love all your writings and encourage people who haven't read them yet to start.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I certainly think recovering our story is just extremely important. I think we can see that now in our current moment.
Well, it also mentions that we're in a kind of compressed time of awakening and of accessing our dormant DNA. How does that play into these cycles that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a really strange moment in time that I'm sure you've noticed, and I'm sure that your listeners are also feeling.
Uh-huh.
Because according to Carl Kalaman and my research in the Mayan Code, the time acceleration factor, the factor that was driving cycles of history that were gradually becoming more and more intense through time, completed itself October 28th, 2011.
Right.
And so we've gone into a completely new zone now, and I actually haven't been public very much this year because I've been I found it rather difficult to comprehend just exactly what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And I can't say that I feel that I do comprehend it, but I think I have some ideas. And it's kind of like we've moved into a zone of a still point in a way.
Uh-huh.
And then the still point, for anybody who's ever been stuck you know, for 4 weeks in a cabin and can't get out the door or whatever, cabin fever. The still point is not necessarily an easy thing. It's kind of a widening circle of consciousness that's spreading out from us and starting to connect us to other beings of our species as well as the planetary fields in general. And it's a very uneasy time for people. And then, of course, you mentioned earlier, we just had a very tragic event in Colorado a couple of days ago, which brings up questions immediately about, well, what do you mean when you say the planetary mind is awakening? Certainly people could have the opinion that we're going into a very, very dark time. Mm-hmm. And on that one, I feel like the information in Awakening the Planetary Mind is especially relevant. Now, this book first came out in 2001 as Catastrophobia, which I think you also read.
Mm-hmm.
And then what had happened last year was the information in Catastrophobia seemed to be so critical and seemed to need an updating. So what I did is I basically wrote an entirely new book.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic thesis of the book is that we suffered a really severe cataclysm around 11,500 to 12,000 years ago, which created a lot of disarrangement in the solar system as well as destruction on our planet. And then because of the enormity of these events and the degree of destruction, first of all, people have forgotten what happened. Now, all ancient indigenous cultures do have this story, but basically the modern person has forgotten that something happened so recently.
Mm-hmm.
And lurking behind that is the idea that many researchers are working on, which is that the civilization before the cataclysm was very advanced. In other words, our civilization was very developed.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just about the cataclysm and the trauma of that. It's also about losing a world that I like to call the golden world.
Mm-hmm.
People long for Eden. They long for the Garden of Eden. And I think these are deep memories going back to a time when life was easier on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, what I would say, Lance, regarding what happened a few days ago in Colorado, I've said repeatedly in my work that as people wake up and remember, a lot of really bizarre psychological contents would be coming forth. That, in other words, like it's like a person who goes in and does therapy for memory recall, and they have to recall a lot of pain and unpleasant incidences in the past.
Mm.
Well, this is like a planetary awakening
of
the pain in the past. And what it's doing, as far as I can tell, it's creating a lot of really bizarre, almost what I would call atavistic behavior, violent, dark behavior. And then on top of that, we're living in a culture where people are being drugged with all kinds of weird mind-altering drugs. And
Right. First
of all, I'd like to say that regarding this young man, we don't have much information yet about what was going on with him, except that he became disturbed a few months ago. And in this culture, American culture, when somebody starts having difficulty, the first thing they do is they're prescribed Paxil or whatever the doctor comes up with. So far, I've kept track of these mass murders, including Columbine, and 85% of them are happening with people who are on various mind control drugs.
Mm.
So it's a weird combination of ancient memory waking up and people attempting to cope with things in the deep subconscious that they don't really understand very well, combined with a culture of putting people on not only one bizarre drug, but mixing a couple of drugs together, you know, when you don't even know what the reaction between each drug is,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Oh, right.
You know. So this is actually all, the events are actually all really deeply related to what I've been writing about and what I've been teaching. It's just that it's just so heartbreaking. You know, I just keep hoping it won't be like this.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, and I'm afraid there's going to be a lot more of it. I don't think there's no way this is going to stop until people get to the bottom of it, start trying to understand what's actually happening in a person's mind, as well as taking a look at whether we should be drugging people. And, of course, there's the issue of gun control. And basically these things just keep happening, and nothing happened after Congresswoman Gifford was shot. Nothing happened to control guns, you know. So there's a level in which you sometimes wonder whether people are finally going to get enraged about this,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I guess the time will tell.
Yeah.
And it always seems that there are motives beyond motives, and that there are often agendas behind these events that we are not able to see as clearly if we're looking at the surface events.
Yes, I agree. And you had a term for that type of event. What did you call that?
Oh, false flag?
Yeah, okay. Cause that's
false flag event.
False flag event. And the question would be, certainly in my case, I've written extensively about how I'm convinced that 9/11 is a false flag event.
Oh, and, absolutely.
Yeah, and many, many of the events like this are being created. But the question is, you know, the really interesting question about that is how do they do that? Now, certainly these drugs can be used as a tool to control people's behavior. That's just mm-hmm. kind of an obvious thing. But in my own work, I also work with 9 dimensions of consciousness. Mm-hmm. I don't restrict my sense of what's going on to just what I call the third dimension. Third
right.
dimension being linear space and time. And as far as I can see, the place to look for what might be going on here is in the fourth dimension. And the fourth
yep.
dimension is the realm of the collective mind that is non-physical. It's kind of palpable because it's emotional, but it's non-physical. The third dimension, of course, is linear space and time. And so in the fourth dimension, all the thoughts of human beings collect and interrelate, and also that the fourth dimension actually connects us to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So when an event like this occurs, then we are also connected to that event because of the collective mind, which
mm-hmm.
is one of the reasons it's so disturbing for people.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I can see, with the global elite and the forces that are attempting to control this planet, they function pretty much in the fourth dimension
mm-hmm.
in terms of how they work.
Yep. Yes, I would agree with that.
And then it certainly looks like they're using astrology in this case.
Oh, most definitely.
Of course, the first thing I did was cast a chart for it, and the astrology for about the last week has been extremely difficult because we're in the middle of the first Uranus-Pluto square, and then Mars moved into an opposition to Uranus. So we've had about a week here of Uranus opposite Mars, T-squaring Pluto in Capricorn.
Mm.
And you know, if the global elite is using astrology, that's certainly a configuration that they would choose to work with to create violent acts.
Yes, that would make a lot of sense, and that's how they have seemed to operate consistently. If we look back at various events, they all pretty much fall into that category of being numerologically and astrologically aligned.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then thrown into this, of course, is the incident in Bulgaria with the Israeli tourists and then the bombing in the building in Damascus. And what these events do is if you don't watch out for it, it can really kind of trick you into feeling very negative and kind of trapped and kind of caught. But in fact, even though we are related to these things by the collective mind, we have our own sovereignty and our own independence within our own lives and within the third dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when this thing happened a couple of days ago in Colorado, the first thing I did is I just stopped and went right into deep meditation
mm-hmm.
and just went into a place of realizing that this is just not part of my reality.
Right.
I've been impeccable about taking a stand against psychoactive drugs. I mean, when I don't mean psychoactive, but serotonin and uptake drugs and that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I've been very vocal about this sort of thing for years, and now the chickens are coming home to roost.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, what I found is that these things, the drugs, no matter how seemingly harmless, they do act as interference waves for the subtle energies that our bodies can perceive when they're free and clear of all of that.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because I could put it another way, which would be to say that they kind of heighten the effect of the fourth dimension.
And
the fourth dimension becomes like a heightened, kind of nervous, kind of dualized, very stressed out field of energy. And the higher frequencies that you're alluding to basically can't reach us in our world.
Right.
And if people are feeling lonely and bereft, you know, and kind of feeling abandoned, I think it's really important to realize that, that what you're missing is you're missing being in touch with those higher levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it would appear that there is some sort of plot going on here. I'd have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you... Did you read Whitley Strieber's 2012 book?
No, I don't think I did.
Because he wrote a novel. He actually wrote it about 5 or 6 years ago, but I reread it again recently. And he wrote a novel about 2012, just being just a series of one disturbing, chaotic event after another, so that people would not be able to be in touch with the spiritual aspects of life and the more subtle frequencies.
I think that's why I didn't read it.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't an easy read. I, of course, read almost everything connected to these issues because it's my research.
Well, of course.
It was not an easy read. It was a good book, but it was not an easy read.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and that does seem to be happening. And as we approach 2012 and beyond, I am sensing that there is a ramping up of this kind of activity to keep us enmeshed in a sleep, focusing on this one and that one and the next one. And we're, you know, the idea is to bat us around like ping pong balls, which is how it's traditionally worked so far.
Right.
The people are not as malleable as they used to be, and those who are waking up are creating kind of, as you said, still points in which they are affecting other people, which allows those people to not be bounced around so much. So I see that we're sharing information that will free us from being at the effect of these events. And we can see through them more easily so that they lose their power over us.
Yeah, I agree. And then regarding the material in awakening the planetary mind, another strong theme in the book is that the memory of the catastrophe, the cataclysms, is actually lurking in our deep subconscious mind.
Right.
So if somebody knows the story and has looked into this by doing their own research or reading a book about it, such as the one I wrote, then they're not as likely to get stirred up by contemporary events as a person is who has a really deep pool of subconscious contents that they haven't gotten in touch with.
Uh-huh.
And for example, where this really becomes relevant is the basic story of the cataclysm is that a fragment from the Vela supernova came into our solar system and caused a lot of anomalies in all of the planets and caused a lot of destruction on Earth. And this actually, the series of cataclysms connected with this, it affected the whole galaxy, and they actually went on over a period of about maybe 1,500 to 2,000 years. There was a very big wipeout of about half the species on the planet. These are known as the Pleistocene extinctions, and there also was a tremendous disturbance in mountain building and geology, and just the water rising, and you know all the really severe cataclysmic effects that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea would be that that's in your inner mind because and you can say, well, where does that come from? It can be in your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in your past life memory if you've had past lives. It can be in your racial memory. There's a tremendous amount of proof coming out of genetics in a field called epigenetics, which shows that memory of an event can go into children and then into grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That stuff has been tested now.
Mm-hmm.
So we do know that we know for sure, scientifically speaking, that memory does remain. And then we can assume that a memory as huge as this has a very profound effect subconsciously, because it involves the trauma of the event itself, as well as the loss of a civilization that the people on this planet must have really loved, as far as we can see. And so then what happens in the current moment is that if all of that memory is in people and in cultures, then when traumatic events occur in the current moment,
mm-hmm.
there's a tendency to be very strongly affected and manipulated by those events because you don't understand the depth and intensity of the subconscious responses. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Like if a Jehovah's Witness is on the corner saying the world is coming to an end.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you have an inner memory of your world coming to an end, you're going to believe that guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So that's one of the reasons there's kind of a hysteria around 2012 that I don't buy into at all. Because there's been a big build-up to have 2012 be the end of the world, kind of end of the world consciousness.
Yes, well, a lot of people are invested heavily in their belief in rapture or disaster things, which allows people to not be responsible for their lives and to not clean up the planet. So, you know, many of us are living in mass denial and in kind of a speculative fear as a result of these events. And I noticed that NASA and people like, for instance, Courtney Brown has remote viewers that have seen an asteroid hitting sometime in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And so these memes are being given to us to kind of re-trigger our catastrophobic moments. And I think that kind of works on a subtle level. As you said, it comes in from the fourth density, and it works on the invisible thought forms.
Yeah, and then speaking of this collective mind issue, as soon as somebody launches one of these ideas, like an asteroid landing in,
mm-hmm.
in 2013, then it spreads all over the place on the mm-hmm. internet and in New Age, whatever, however it gets around. And then it becomes a collective obsession.
Yes.
And that's what's so hard to escape, because first of all, what you have to do with that stuff is you have to take responsibility for really analyzing just what's being said and whether it's true or not. Remember last year, remember the Comet Elainin thing?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Last year, everybody thought that Comet Elainin was going to come in and was going to blow up the sun.
Yes.
And I actually cracked up. I thought, I've gone through so many of these at this point that they're funny to me.
Yeah, me too.
You know, how long, you know, if you wait for the end of the world about 25 times, that's just about enough. And then it becomes funny. And so Elainin was especially funny because just as it started to come in, kind of through the zone of Venus and the Earth and started approaching the sun. A great big solar flare went out of the sun and blew it up.
Yeah.
Now, I really got a charge out of that.
Yeah.
Because that told me, and I've always felt this symbiosis and synchronicity with the sun. You know, I've always felt like, okay, well, why are we alive? Why are the plants growing and all that? Well, it's the sun.
Yeah.
And so it just made such logical sense to me that the sun would respond electromagnetically with a big plasma explosion and would blow off Comet Elainin.
Oh, yes.
Isn't that interesting?
It's fascinating. And in addition to that, we've been kind of led down the garden path to look at the sun as dangerous and horrifying, and we're reaching the maximum solar flares. And many of my friends and myself see the sun as a conscious being and an entity that is empowering us, that these solar flares that are coming are actually designed to help us on the levels that we are not generally aware of. And I've even started to sun gaze at dusk and started to commune with the sun. And I see the sun as being an extremely positive life force that we can tap into, and it's not necessary to be afraid of the sun. If anything, just the opposite.
Yeah, I agree. And then in a lot of indigenous training, we're trained how to commune with the sun. What you're doing is perfect. You know, we're supposed to commune with the sun when it's right in the early rising in the morning
uh-huh.
and then at dusk. And that's the time to communicate with the sun because obviously you can't look at it otherwise.
Right.
And there have been a few New Age teachers who have talked about looking at the sun, and I certainly would not advise that.
Right.
Yeah, you've heard that, and I think that's that's a good example of something that's dangerous
and
ridiculous. But the other thing about the sun is when I did work with my Mayan elders down in Mexico and Guatemala, we were taking our consciousness into the sun.
Ah.
And then once it was in the sun, then we could move it out to the galactic center.
Ah.
So there's issues here of communicating with the galactic center, because the galactic center right now is a very activated and creative place right now in terms of transmuting human consciousness. We're actually very much, much more involved with the galactic center than people realize.
And I was going to ask you about that, something to the effect about how and when do alignments with the galactic center affect us?
Now the big alignment with the Galactic Center, by the way, was 1998, and it's not 2012. There's a fair amount of false information floating around.
Oh.
We are in the middle of an alignment with the Galactic Center that's about a 50. It's close for about 50 years,
okay,
which would be like about 1980 through about 19 whatever that is added up, 2030, something like that.
Oh, okay.
And the closest point was May, June of 1998.
Oh.
So any stories you hear about how that big galactic alignment is somehow going to create a catastrophe are just simply not true, because if it was going to happen, it would have happened in 98. And as a matter of fact, we had some totally extraordinary galactic events in 1998 at the time of this alignment, some amazing gamma ray bursts and stuff like that. I cataloged a lot of that material in Alchemy of Nine Dimensions.
Oh, one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, I like Alchemy too. And that's where I love that, because that whole data bank is in there in terms of what actually occurred. So the important thing is we have been in the middle of an intense galactic alignment already for like 30 years, and we already have another 20 years to go. So we're waking up within the galactic mind. And the interesting thing about this technique that we were taught with indigenous elders is that it doesn't work to take your consciousness from here on Earth into the galactic center.
Mm.
If you want to get into the galactic center and get into those cycles and those long time waves and all that,
mm-hmm,
you got to move your consciousness into the sun like you're doing at dusk.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it's in the sun, move it into the galactic center, and you'd be pretty surprised at what happens.
That's what I've been experimenting with lately.
Yeah,
I haven't had a great deal of success with it, but I've been moving into the sun, and then I imagine the galactic center. So I'm mm-hmm going to continue with that process, because intuitively that's what I was trying to do.
Yeah, and of course, the funny thing about that stuff is we all actually know that stuff.
Right, right.
And that's why we should play more, because
right,
if you start to play, you intuitively know exactly what to do.
Right, and same thing with rituals and things like that. We intuitively know ritual, and we could create ritual from nothing. So,
that's right, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now the Galactic Center, doesn't that in turn connect with the larger center that...
the Supergalactic Center.
Supergalactic, that's right.
Yeah, and the Supergalactic Center, in terms of astrology, is located at 1 degree Libra, 0 to 1 degrees of Libra. And it's the center of 27 or 28 local galaxies. The Milky Way is one of them.
Wow.
And then some of this stuff is really cool stuff, like the Andromeda Galaxy is one of those galaxies also. And then Andromeda is a twin galaxy to our galaxy. So there's all kinds of wonderful organic relationships between things.
Some people seem to think that the Andromeda Galaxy is the male counterpart to the Milky Way, and that they are like twin flames, and they're going to be dancing with each other and having kind of a cosmic tantric moment in the near future.
Well, they actually are.
Are they?
Yeah. Astronomically, we have known for about, I have to think, probably 30 years that Andromeda and Milky Way Galaxy are approaching each other approximately 10 times faster than they should be according to ordinary physics.
Oh.
And nobody knows what this means. There's nothing to worry about here, because you have to remember the space between stars and planets and all that is so gigantic.
Oh,
even if they were to pass through each other, which would be an interesting experience, which is kind of what you're alluding to.
Yes.
And yeah, even if they become one galaxy, I don't know.
It could be.
Yeah.
But
see, that's a good example of what a fascinating time this is to be alive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's never been anything like this, and we know that the planets and the stars have moved various places over, you know, long periods of time. So it's even conceivable, isn't it, that our whole astrology will be altered as we progress along this path?
Yeah, I basically, as you know from my work, believe that the axis of our planet was not even basically tilted until this cataclysm. In other words, we moved into a completely new arena 11,500 years ago in terms of the locations of the planets. And there are, and this is something that I've been trying to chase down for years, and I'm kind of finally getting someplace here. The issue would be what was the solar system like before the cataclysm?
Mm.
And I finally found a source. I'm sitting in my library right now. And the source on this one is the Saturn Myth by David Talbot.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, now that came out about, I think it came out in 1980. And somehow I missed it. I don't know how, because I don't miss very many things. But
no, you don't.
Somebody gave me a tip on that, and I think that that's a fantastic source for attempting to understand what the solar system was like before the cataclysm.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and David Talbot doesn't factor the cataclysm into it. I had to put that he seems to think that Saturn was very much closer to Earth and that planets were in a different location about approximately 8,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm,
he seems to think that things changed a lot from 8,000 to 4,000 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
But in my world, I think probably if he was still with us, he might take a close look at the proof for the cataclysm, and he might start thinking about this a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of the timing there, the solar system used to be very different than it is now. And I think we're just beginning to recover that information at this time.
Yes, yes. And there's many that speculate that ancient records seem to indicate that the moon was not here at one point, and all of a sudden it was.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
and Talbot gets after that. Talbot goes into what all of that might be.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, we know so little in many ways, but that's why we're here discussing it.
Yeah, that's right. And then the other thing that I dealt with in Awakening the Planetary Mind was the issue of the way that information is being blocked. What happened for me was I started digging into this whole issue of the cataclysm and the real story about 55, 60 years ago. Because when I was a little girl, I was an initiate of my Cherokee Celtic grandfather.
Mm.
And my grandfather on the Cherokee side had the Cherokee records. And the Cherokee records have the whole story of the cataclysm, and they have some information about the previous world before it and all that. So I grew up with those ideas. And then when I got into my teenage years, I started researching. And fortunately for me, Velikovsky came along in the 1950s when I was like 15 years old. So I started out very early in this whole movement of attempting to figure out the ancient story.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that we're coming to the point, here we are 50 years later, we basically know a lot at this point. It's really amazing how much we know at this point. And people are out there just connecting those dots all over the place, day after day right now.
Well, thank goodness. It's about time.
Yeah, I know. And then I think another thing I'd like to say about it is that when you get into this material, you get very excited by it. I'm sure you've noticed that yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Because
it's
just utterly fascinating, and it's the story of time, and it's the story of the ancient myths and the ancient people. And the more you become fascinated with this planet and this solar system and this galaxy and universe, then the less likely you're going to be to get into that tunnel vision that people get into when they start worrying about the end of the world.
Right. Right.
You know.
Well, it's been here a long time, and most likely she'll be here after we are if we don't change our ways. We'd be more likely to be taking off from, our own self-destructive tendencies than from cosmic events.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'd be more concerned about man's activities than the activities of nature.
Oh, yeah. That's another issue altogether.
Yeah, right.
Which is what everybody should be looking at is what human beings are doing, and they shouldn't be worrying about asteroids.
That's like, right.
Why don't we worry about gun control, and why don't we worry about drugging people, you know?
And wars and
yeah.
corruption and, all the other things, the rackets that are going on here. I mean, you can't even blink an eye without seeing something that's indirectly or directly attached to some kind of control mechanism that is not designed to empower humans, but to destroy us, ultimately.
That's right. And then I used to be a publisher, as you know, and so I continue to kind of, be there for writers and stuff. And so I just finished reading a manuscript by Timothy Wiley. You probably remember him. He's the dolphin guy. And he has taken it upon himself to write some books about the Urantia material. Now, did you ever read the Urantia book?
I did. I never got all the way through it. I just
nobody did. 1,800 pages.
Yeah, I tried.
but what Timothy Wiley extracts out of it is the notion that the Earth may have been selected to ultimately be like the jewel of the universe. We may be going through a lot of the experiences that we're going through in order to gain wisdom and knowledge, because we're slated eventually, the beings on this planet are slated to be teachers and leaders of civilization throughout the universe itself.
Oh, so well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's a whole issue of just how special this place is.
Yes, yes.
And when you start to think that way, then you start growing your own vegetables and taking care of your health and living a life that fits with the vibrations of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Another one that talks about that is Robert Shapiro in his Explorer Race series.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, and he basically says the same thing. So
mm-hmm.
It's conceivable that our golden age is in the future, and that we're using the ancient mythologies to revitalize our vision and our imagination to create a beautiful future in which we are connected with other civilizations and other planetary systems, but we take care of this one first.
Yeah, and that brings up the issue of exopolitics, because, of course, one of the things I went after in both the Mayan Code and Awakening the Planetary Mind is exopolitics.
Ah.
And exopolitics is a field of study that the basic inventor is Alfred Weber.
Yeah.
And the basic idea with exopolitics is that the Earth was quarantined. Basically, Alfred and I have had some discussions about this, and we both think that we were quarantined right after the cataclysm. We both think that the cataclysm created such stress for our species and made us into such a violent race of people that we had to be quarantined from the rest of the universe until we wake up and become loving beings again. And so Alfred and I both feel that that's really what Kalaman's schedule was all about.
Oh.
We both think that the quarantine got lifted October 28th, 2011.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, I have noticed since the end of the calendar in October, I have definitely noticed more contact with beings and species in the universe itself.
Wow.
I have been experiencing an opening.
Oh, good.
But at the same time, being here right now is so traumatic.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
of the events that are occurring, that it's kind of like a constant struggle between being traumatized by the events and still staying open so that you can receive these contacts, which goes back to something you said in the beginning of this interview, that these events are being created to keep us away from being able to pick up subtle forces and subtle
right.
consciousness.
Right. Right, and I'm finding that for me, what works is caring for the human body and eliminating toxins and growing my own vegetables, walking barefoot on the land, and communing with the sun and with nature. In fact, I saw some lights outside last night, which were kind of unusual, and I thought it might be a plane, and then it kind of went up, and then it went down, and eventually went off, but I don't know what it was, but I think these things are everywhere, and they're not just metaphors and imagination. We're in many worlds simultaneously. It's just mm-hmm. a matter of what frequency we're tuning into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some people also mention, and I wonder if you have done research on this or maybe know something about it, the idea that there's a supergalactic wave that will be hitting us fairly soon.
Yeah, now that comes from Paul LaViolette.
Oh, okay.
He's a wonderful researcher. He's especially written some incredible material on pulsars as a signaling system in the galaxy, and I covered that extensively in Alchemy because I think it's such important material. And so Paul wrote a book about galactic superwaves, and his thinking is pretty close to mine in terms of the catastrophes and the research that I did, of course, is with two scientists, J.B. Dallaire and D.S. Allen. So the actual scientific research isn't mine. I worked with two scientists on that data. And LaViolette and Allen and Dallaire and I are all pretty close. In fact, LaViolette's ideas have influenced me into stretching out the period of the cataclysm. I've been thinking of the cataclysms as more like 1400 to 11,500 BC.
Mm.
Certainly the events 11,500 years ago were the really big event, but there were influences that were affecting our solar system for 2500 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when one of these super waves moves through the galaxy, and I think LaViolette knows what he's talking about.
Mm.
What it does is as it moves along, the forces of it set off supernovas. And so I think what happened was I think the Vela supernova was actually triggered by a galactic wave.
Oh.
So the question is that we're interested in here, because I think he's right about that, but the question is another one coming?
Oh.
That's the big question. And number one, I don't think we know whether that's going on or not.
Right.
And then based on my understanding of catastrophobia, there would be a strong tendency for somebody to have the memory of the other galactic wave in their consciousness, and then there would be a tendency to think it's going to happen again.
Right.
If you
right.
see what I mean. It's the same
yeah.
old thing again.
Right. Right. And we know those many of those frequencies are being used to plant those memes and thoughts so that, we are less able to have our own.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And then another thing that's going on right now that's really, this is a factor that I have to monitor constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's happened in the last, say, 15, 20, 25 years is we've put out all kinds of great satellites that are giving us all kinds of new visual data.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so much fun to go to spaceweather.com and watch the sun every day. You probably
mm-hmm.
do that,
Mm-hmm.
And we have the ability now to see things that we couldn't see before.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as they started putting those satellites out there, all of a sudden they started realizing there's all these asteroids flying around. So the question was, just like with the super wave, the question is this a new thing, or have they just been flying around all the time, but we couldn't see them?
Right.
And see, I think there's a lot of things going on like that right now, where we get a new technology, and we can see something we never saw before, and then there's a tendency to think that something new is happening.
Right.
If you see what I mean. But,
yes,
but that's
I do.
Very hard to monitor. Whenever there's any kind of event, I always like look at it that way and try to get as much information as I can.
Oh yes, well another way to say that is that there's so many higher frequencies penetrating this reality now that people are their vibration is being raised, and so we're seeing more of the darkness and of what's really there. So it looks like we're seeing things that we didn't see before, we didn't know about. So a lot of stuff is coming to light, and it's not nearly enough. It's barely scratching the surface as far as what we have some awareness about. But at least the control mechanisms seem to be loosening up a bit that keep all of us from finding out what's really going on and from total transparency.
Yeah, and then another good thing that's happening now is a few years ago, the shutdown in information was getting to be so total that I was starting to be afraid that I wouldn't be able to understand what's actually happening in my own reality.
Uh-huh.
But fortunately, because of the different technologies that people have now, you can't shut information down anymore.
Mm.
And I'm so grateful for that, because I don't know about you, but whatever is going on, I would like to have access to comprehending what it is.
Precisely.
You know, I don't want to be in the dark.
That's right.
I don't care what it is, to tell you the truth. I just would like to know what it is.
Right. I want to know whether it's good, bad, or ugly. And that gives us the ability to navigate these waters with more certainty.
Yeah. Yeah.
The actual reality of it is not important, you know, whether it's this, that, or the other thing. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, and you know, Lance, the part of that frustrates me the most is this issue of the cover-up on using these drugs, using these mind-altering drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They passed the Medical Act in 1998, and supposedly the purpose of the Medical Act was to protect your personal records, right? Remember that
right
one? But what they use the Medical Act for is it's illegal for a journalist or a reporter to give out any information on radio, TV, or in the newspapers about what kind of medications people are taking.
Oh.
Now, see, wasn't that clever?
Well, of course.
Yeah, and so fortunately, living in the world that we live in, there's a person who broke the whole thing wide open. And the book is called Medication Madness.
Oh.
And I can't remember the name of the author right now. I don't have the book here. I was looking for it this morning so I could tell you. But it doesn't matter. Just go to the Internet and just order a book called Medication Madness. Because this is a doctor who has been assisting families who are having medical tragedies from these drugs. Because, of course, what happens with these things, assuming that this young man in Colorado was triggered by some kind of drug,
mm-hmm.
just imagine what that does to his family.
Mm.
Just imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, my oldest son had Asperger's syndrome,
ooh.
And his name was Tom. And Tom was a really, really wonderful human being, and then he got a DUI when he was 42 years old. And the court ordered him to go to a psychiatrist.
Oh.
And even though our family has been absolutely against taking any allopathic drugs,
uh-huh.
he was forced by the court, and they put him on Paxil. And he committed suicide 3 months later.
Wow.
Now, this is back in 2004.
Wow.
But can you imagine what that did to our family?
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, yeah, so this doctor has for the last 20 to 25 years, has worked with families who have people on drugs or who are on drugs or whatever you name it. He's got a very big practice. And then finally, after watching what was going on for the last 25 years, he wrote a book where he's really telling the real truth about what these things cause and what they're creating.
Well, you might be surprised to hear this one, which is related to what you're telling me. I did some research on the use of fluoride in the water, which we know is put in the tap water in huge quantities. Sometimes they just shovel it out, and sometimes they just dump the buckets in. And it's not organic fluoride that's chelated to the water. It's inorganic, and it's poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
So, and fluoride is known to be, the pineal gland is a magnet for fluoride. It calcifies the pineal gland. So when I looked up to find out what else fluoride was in, I discovered that it was one of the main ingredients in Prozac, many of the athletic products that are sold. It's also put into baby food.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, it was used in one of the wars, the Nazi-Germany war, mm-hmm. to dumb down the people. So I suspect that that was where it was initially tested to see how effective it would be to keep people docile, and certainly we see a lot of docile people today. And if it, they start with the babies, mm-hmm. with baby food, and they give these allopathic medicines for psychoactive use, then, you know, they get you on fluoride no matter which way they get you.
Yeah, and so to avoid the biggest bummer we've had for the day, this is a great example of how conscious we've all got to be.
Yes.
And I really mean that. I mean, it's amazing how much responsibility each one of us has to take at this point.
Oh,
yeah. You have to know everything that you just said. You have to read books like Medication Madness. You have to inform yourself at this point, because otherwise you're just going to be a victim of a program. I mean,
that's right.
It's just appalling what's happening.
It is. It is. And you're so right. We have to make ourselves aware and do our homework, and not just take our word for it and believe what we say on the radio, because that's largely what people have been doing, is just listening and saying, oh, this is what's going on. You have to really do the research for yourself and then test it out and see if, for instance, if drinking distilled water washes out the fluoride in the body.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I found out, and so on and so forth.
And they tell you all the time not to drink distilled water. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, yes. Well,
uh-huh.
That's a big ruse from the medical industry.
Uh-huh.
That there's a fallacy that if you drink it for more than 30 days, it'll leach the minerals out of your body.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't do that. In mm-hmm. fact, it can't do that because it has a positive charge, a negative charge, and it forces the positively charged minerals and inorganic minerals out of the body. Dr. Paul Bragg used it for all his life. He used distilled water and fasting in order to do a cleanse on the body, and he recommended that you drink only distilled water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the
really
way
thanks for that tip. See, that's a good example of where you can just pick up a tip like that.
Oh, yeah.
I avoided fluoride, of course, but I didn't know. I always thought you shouldn't be drinking distilled water.
Oh, it's wonderful once you get
yeah.
started on it. It's just the cleanest water you can get.
Mm-hmm,
radiation
right.
can't be in it either.
Now, that's true, which is
yeah.
a real issue for us out in the West Coast at this point.
Yeah. So, but to get back to your book,
mm-hmm.
what are some of the things that you feel are from the book and from your own experiences that are the most important things that we should be, that would empower us at this time?
Well, this is the good old Pleiadian own your head, idea.
Yeah.
And we just have to observe at this point what is happening in our minds. We've got to learn how to pay attention to how we're responding to what we're hearing and what we're retaining and points of view that we're taking in. I mean, I just spend a tremendous amount of time observing those things all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason for this issue of awakening the planetary mind and understanding our story is it actually teaches you how to own your own head and observe what's in your mind. And then when you were talking a minute ago, you reminded me of something else that the Pleiadians have often commented. They say that we're living in an extremely interesting age right now, because all we have to do in order to protect ourselves is to just not turn it on, which in this case would be TV,
mm-hmm.
Not put it in our mouths, you know, not swallow the pill,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, if you know what I mean. And the Pleiadians have often talked about how if you go back like 500 or 600 years ago,
mm-hmm.
that you might have gotten stuck in a torture chamber, you know, or you might have gotten stuck down in the bottom of a dungeon and somebody threw away the key.
Uh-huh.
But all you need to do now is educate yourself and just refuse to do it.
Right.
And it's really, when you start to think about that, we actually have a tremendous amount of freedom at this point if we are well informed.
Yes, yes.
And there's so many people like you and me and millions of other researchers who are striving to bring the information to the people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And nothing's going to stop it. Now that we have internet and everything, nothing's going to stop it.
That's right. Well, one of the things that I noticed from when I was reviewing your book today was the importance of being fully grounded in our bodies.
About 1 minute.
to perceive the time agendas from higher dimensions.
Yeah, being grounded. And that's, again, it goes back to the issue of what's in your head again. Because in order to be grounded, you have to be conscious of what's in your mind. And then once you're conscious of what's in your mind and you have a sense of where you are, then you can feel whether you're really fundamentally connected and grounded. And you mentioned growing your own food and being in nature. And I've been doing as much of that, much, much more of that now than I ever have before in my whole life. Because it seems like the only thing that we can do right now for ourselves to help us handle the intensity of things.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so being grounded by taking a walk, being grounded by sitting still, these things are an absolute necessity. They always mm-hmm. were, but now it's a critical need.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it interesting that many of these practices are in alignment with the shamanic teachings and the American Native American Indians and the Kogi and the rest of it, that that they do have the way, you know, and they walk between worlds. And I think we're reaching a point where we will have that ability to do likewise.
Yes, I think it is already happening. As far as
some people are experiencing that. And you also mentioned the ecstatic body postures designed by Dr. Felicitas Goodman, which that looked fascinating.
Yeah, and that's amazing because the postures go back. We at the Institute, we are going back as far as 45,000 years now with the new posture.
Wow.
So in the Mayan code and then in Awakening the Planetary Mind, I did an analysis of the last 100,000 years of human consciousness.
Wow.
And our consciousness was very, very highly developed 50,000 years ago.
Oh, yes, higher than now.
Think the postures, I think the postures go all the way back to that point, you know, back that far in time. And what's amazing is they still work today.
I'm sorry, top of the hour.
Oh, okay. Well, it looks like we are reaching just about the end of the show, so I'm going to ask you if you would like to share your website, where people can find your books, and the ones I recommend are all of your books, but especially The Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, which is my personal handbook and one of my all-time favorites of all books.
Yeah,
so would you?
And I love that book.
Isn't it wonderful?
I love that book.
It's a must-have.
Yes, I agree with you. And my website's easy. It's handcloud2012.com.
Wonderful. Well, Barbara, I can't thank you enough for coming back and sharing your experience, your wisdom, and your hope with us. And you're just an inspiration to all of us. Thank you
so much. Thank you, Matt. It's always nice talking to you.
You too. All right. Bye-bye, everyone. Till the next time.